Die Übersetzung von Jans Stimme vom Deutschen ins Englische wurde mit einer KI erstellt.
The black leopard moved slowly, crouched low toward the fence, growling softly. Her eyes are fixed on a dog walking beside me through the snow. Amira, that's her name, seems completely unimpressed. For her, this is everyday life. She knows the leopard is safely inside her enclosure and can't harm her. Dangerous, truly dangerous. Here is only the human being. In the background, artillery can already be heard. For the animals in Feldman Eco Park near Kharkiv, the war has long since become part of the soundscape. Before the Russian invasion 4 years ago, this park was a popular destination for families. Today, it is a place where animals continue to live under fire, and where people try to cope with the war. Children from occupied territories, traumatized soldiers, journalists, rescue workers. The question is, how do you rescue animals in a war where there isn't even enough protection for people? And how can a zoo still become a kind of refuge?
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hello, I'm Jan Jessen, crisis and war reporter for the Funke Media Group. During my most recent visit to Ukraine, I also traveled to Kharkiv, where I visited Feldman Eco Park, located about a 15-minute drive from this northeastern Ukrainian city of millions. Around 5,000 animals once lived in this park. In this episode of our podcast, I speak with two people who are fighting for the lives of these animals in very different ways. Olena Klimenko, the spokesperson for Feldman Eco Park, and Ralf Sieger, founder of the organization Helden für Tiere, known to many from the Vox documentary Harte Hunde, Ralf Sieger greift ein. We begin in the park with Olena. When you arrive at Feldman Eco Park, the first thing you see at the entrance is a large black memorial board. On it are photographs of people who gave their lives to save animals. Animals that were evacuated when the Russian invasion began in February 2022. At that time, the front line rolled over Kharkiv. Russian soldiers were inside the city itself, and the fighting also caused massive damage to this zoo. What followed was an unprecedented evacuation effort. Thousands of animals were brought to safety. Others that had escaped from destroyed enclosures were recaptured. All of this took place under life-threatening conditions, and six people lost their lives. That black board at the entrance of the park commemorates them. Olena welcomed us as we entered the park and guided us through the grounds. It's a vast area, covering around 140 hectares. It feels like a mix between a zoo and a park. There are kiosks everywhere, now empty of course, benches where visitors once rested, and then the enclosures, most of which have since been restored. But in some places you can still see that the park remains under threat. The administrative building is damaged, and a large aviary has been destroyed. As recently as January, a glide bomb struck the area. Last year, there were multiple drone attacks, so the park is still not safe, but animals are once again living here. At the beginning, I asked Olena what kind of place this park is. She told me it was founded in 2011. At its peak, it housed around 5,000 animals from roughly 300 different species. In addition, it offered therapy programs for children with disabilities, for veterans, and for people simply seeking rest and recovery. There was equine therapy and other services, and everything was free of charge. The park was funded by an oligarch, a very wealthy man for whom it was important to create a place like this in Kharkiv, a place for relaxation and escape. People from all over Ukraine used to come here to unwind, to stroll through the grounds, and to see the animals. And then, as mentioned, the Russian invasion began.
Скажемо так, ну, всі, ну, розмови про війну були, звісно.
All the time, everyone was talking about the war, but everyone was hoping it would never actually happen. Evacuating 5,000 animals at once would have been impossible. When we began the large evacuation, around 300 animals died due to shelling and stress, and six of our employees and volunteers were killed during these attacks. I am grateful to all the zoos and animal parks that took in animals. The animals were distributed all across Ukraine.
This shelling lasted nearly 200 days. For 200 days, the zoo was under constant fire. Naturally, no enclosure remained intact. As Olena said, around 300 animals were killed. Many others escaped at the time, fleeing into the nearby forests. They were later brought back or recaptured by helpers and transported to the west of the country to keep them safe. As I mentioned earlier, six people lost their lives. Six staff members who tried to help, who attempted to get the animals out safely. They were killed during the Russian shelling. Then, in the autumn of 2022, a Ukrainian counteroffensive pushed Russian forces back behind the borders. That's when the constant shelling of the park finally stopped. The park's management began to consider reopening to start bringing animals back. But the damage from that time is still visible today. There are small memorials marking where rockets struck. Craters can still be seen. At the same time, it's clear how much has been rebuilt in recent years and that many animals have returned. There are wolves in the park, bears, leopards, including the very rare black leopard I mentioned at the beginning. There are many birds and even a kind of petting zoo. The park is, in a way, alive again, but it remains dangerous. At present, there are about 1,500 animals here, compared to the former 5,000. Many of them are animals rescued from combat zones. This war in Ukraine is devastating for wildlife. Rockets, artillery, and mortar fire are destroying entire forest areas near the front lines. Deer, roe deer, and other animals are dying in large numbers. People fleeing war zones often leave their animals behind. Pets like dogs and cats, but also livestock such as cows and pigs. The team at Feldman Eco Park takes care of these animals. At the same time, the park has once again become a place where people come, people who are themselves traumatized by the war. I want to ask Olena what rehabilitation here actually means in concrete terms.
Реабілітаційні програми – це люди, коли можуть розвантажитися психологічно, тобто відпустити якісь, я сама людина, яка пережила окупацію, коли прийшла сюди працювати, я то на постійній основі.
We offer a wide range of activities here. I myself experienced the occupation and then came here and started working in the park. The groups that come to us are very diverse. Some simply want to sit quietly with the animals. Others go to the llamas, hug them, feed the lemurs, talk to the animals, just to find a bit of calm. There are also groups who come here with psychologists, especially with children. We then organize different activities, and sometimes even bring in facilitators to work with them. And we offer hippotherapy, meaning therapy with horses.
Дехто хоче розваги, якщо це діти, ми можемо аніматора запросити, влаштувати таке невеличке свято. В залежності, знову, різні у нас напрямки роботи.
Olena is not just the park's spokesperson. She is herself shaped by the war. She lived through the occupation and now works in a place where people hug llamas, feed monkeys, and sit in small garden shelters, just a few kilometers from the front line. But Feldman Eco Park is not only a rehabilitation center for people, it is also a refuge for animals that no longer have anyone. And unfortunately, it remains a target of attacks. As I mentioned earlier, when you walk through the park, you can see fresh traces of strikes everywhere. The large aviary that was hit in January, the drone attacks in the middle of last year, it all feels somewhat surreal. You can't help but wonder, why attack a zoo? Why target a place like this? Olena doesn't have an answer either. She takes me to the contact area, essentially the park's petting zoo, and shows me a goat. It looks adorable, white, with a shaggy tuft of hair, and very trusting. It comes right up to us. And, as she tells me with a smile, this is the most handsome guy in the entire zoo.
This is Snowy. His grandmother is 92 and his grandfather is 98. They loved him and didn't want him to be slaughtered, so they gave him to us. He is now, so to speak, the most fashionable guy in the village. These are mainly pets from areas close to the front line, and this here is our contact zone. Anyone can come, spend time with them, hug them. Especially children love it. Last year, a Shahed drone struck right here in the contact area and killed two goats. Some others suffered concussions. A drone that simply, randomly, hit our animals.
It's already hard to comprehend. On the one hand, there is this petting zoo, a place where children come to spend time with the animals, to pet them, to feed them, to enjoy a moment of normality. And then, Russian forces fire a drone into exactly this area. Of course, it is impossible to say with certainty what exactly happened, whether it was a malfunction, whether the drone was shot down. It is difficult to imagine that something like this was deliberately intended, even though this war is marked by numerous war crimes. In any case, this is not a military target in any meaningful sense. If anything, it feels like a waste of ammunition to strike a place like this. But as I said, we simply don't know. What is certain is that it is deeply distressing to hear what continues to happen in this zoo. But Feldman Ecopark is not only struggling with shelling, it is also affected by something many people will recognize from the news: Russian attacks on energy infrastructure. Last winter I saw this myself. Hundreds of thousands of people in Kyiv, Odessa, and Kharkiv were left without electricity, without water, without heating. And of course, this also affects Feldman Ecopark. Power outages are life-threatening in a zoo that keeps exotic animals.
Проблеми великі насправді, тому що ми від обстрілів також страждаємо, тому плані, що електрика у нас зникає і часом.
We are facing major problems with electricity and heating. In some areas, warmth depends entirely on electricity, and we are experiencing constant power outages. We have animals such as zebras, monkeys, and lemurs that need to live in environments where the temperature must never drop below 25 degrees Celsius. When the power goes out, we switch on generators. But because they run almost all the time, they keep breaking down. We are very grateful to our partners from Germany, who have supported us with generators and financial aid. Because you cannot tell animals. It's going to be cold today, and we won't be able to feed you today.
Також ми безмежно вдячні, що вони там допомогли із генераторами, із певною допомогою. І саме завдяки цьому ми хоч якось цю зиму пережили.
So, as a result, generators from Germany are being used in an attempt to keep the animals warm. They also rely on heating, something I witnessed myself, by using wood in some areas. In certain enclosures, especially in the monkey houses, you can see smoke rising from the roofs. When I asked about it, I was told they have started using wood for heating because there is not always enough diesel for the generators. And even when there is fuel, the generators cannot run continuously. They would simply break down. So they improvise, as they so often have to do. In this case, heating is partially done with wood. At the same time, Russian forces repeatedly target the energy infrastructure with missiles and other munitions, striking substations and other critical facilities. In that sense, Feldman Ecopark has also become a symbol of many aspects of this war: civilian infrastructure under attack, volunteers forced to improvise, people stepping in to help, and a massive dependence on external aid. Another person who repeatedly travels to the front lines to rescue animals is Ralph Seeger. Many may know him from the Vox documentary Harte Hunde, Ralph Seeger greift ein. Ralph is a martial artist, animal welfare activist, and founder of the organization Helden für Tiere. Since the beginning of the Russian invasion 4 years ago, he has been traveling to Ukraine again and again. I spoke with him about why he decided to become active in this war and how dangerous his missions are.
Also bei mir war diese Entscheidung also sofort gefallen. Der Krieg hat angefangen der Krieg fing an, so muss man das sagen. Und ich habe sofort zum Steve gesagt, du musst fahren und dort helfen. Am Anfang war er natürlich nicht so begeistert. Steve war wie ich auch ehemaliger Fallschirmjäger.
For me, that decision was made immediately. The war had started, or rather, I should say, when the war began. And I told Steve, I have to go and help there. At first, he wasn't too enthusiastic because he naturally thought, man, we might not come back from this. Steve, like me, is a former paratrooper and knows the dangers of war, and he understands what can happen there. That was always a major issue. But shortly afterwards, he came to me and said, wherever you go, I'm coming with you. And then, right from the very beginning of the war, we set off, straight to Borodyanka. At that time, Bucha and Irpin were already there. It was extremely bad. And that's where we immediately began our operations. We couldn't go any further at the time. I still remember Borodyanka in particular. There was this horrific case involving more than 700 or 800 dogs in a shelter that the owner had abandoned, leaving the animals to fend for themselves. And you simply have to understand, they ended up killing each other because they had nothing to eat. And they then ate the dead bodies of their companions. I say it exactly like that. I rescued many animals there as well. We brought them to Kyiv. When you looked into the eyes of those animals, it was just heartbreaking to see what these poor creatures had been through. It was a very, very difficult time.
Wenn man dann in die Augen von diesen Tieren geschaut hat, war das einfach nur schlimm. was diese armen Wesen dort mitgemacht haben. Das war eine sehr schlimme Zeit.
Ralph Seeger set out at a time when many were still wondering how long this war would actually last. He and his team were already standing in the suburbs of Kiev, in Bucha, Irpin, Borodyanka, places that would later become synonymous with war crimes. He says that animals do not distinguish between Russian or Ukrainian, and he in turn does not distinguish between humans and animals.
After that, we were of course able to continue traveling into the Donbass region, which we still do to this day, and we carried out many, many large-scale rescue operations there, for both humans and animals. It was always bilateral, because I think it is important that, when you are operating in a war zone, you help wherever help is possible. I don't differentiate between whether it's a cat, a dog, or a human. I try to evacuate everything.
Yes, that is of course highly commendable. I have to admit I sometimes personally flinch a bit. When people become so deeply involved in wars, so strongly committed to animals, I also notice it in my own experience. When I post something about the war on social media describing human fates, I get a solid response. But when I post something about animals, about a sad dog sitting somewhere alone, the reactions are noticeably stronger, and those posts reach far more people. And that makes me sometimes wonder whether the standards have shifted. But what I really appreciate about Ralph is that he says, we try to save everything, including humans who are in danger. He is not solely focused on animals. At the same time, it must also be said that what Ralph Seeger and the other animal rescuers are doing is extremely dangerous. The front line in Ukraine has changed dramatically. At the beginning, there were mainly reconnaissance drones in the air. Today, working near the front has become extremely dangerous for journalists, but also for aid workers, because the so-called kill zone has expanded to around 40 kilometers in depth. Drones are everywhere in the air, attacking anything that moves through the area, and I asked Ralph how much this has changed his missions.
Ja, Jan, wir haben am Anfang, wie ich das schon erwähnte, schweren Beschuss erlebt, immer durch Artillerie, Raketen, die waren sehr gefährlich, denn man muss wissen, die sind extrem stark.
At the beginning, as I already mentioned, we experienced heavy shelling, mainly artillery and rockets. They were extremely dangerous. You have to understand, they are extremely powerful. For example, the S-300 systems. If you were within a few hundred meters of an impact, you were effectively gone. Over the years, it has become much more insidious, especially what you mentioned, drones. That is something that is no longer controllable. Wherever you move, you basically have almost no chance. That is why I carry out my missions together with Kraken, the Ukrainian Military Special Unit, and the White Angels, the National Police Unit of Ukraine. They have special equipment to disrupt drones, but only those that are not controlled via fiber optic cables. Against fiber optic drones, there is no way to protect yourself. Good friends of mine, I went to Kupiansk with them on my last mission before Christmas, rescued animals there, and also two elderly women, because a drone had hit the house next door, and the man had died. We evacuated them. Shortly afterwards, the dam of a huge reservoir was blown up. And those two people who were with me on that very day, a 23-year-old female police officer and a 35-year-old male officer, were a few weeks later in exactly the same area and were hit by a drone. They didn't survive. I have experienced this so many times. In that place, life and death are sometimes incredibly close to each other.
Später genau in dem gleichen Gebiet auch von einer Drohne ja erwischt worden und die beiden gibt's nicht mehr. Ja, das ist, das habe ich so oft erlebt. Leben und Tod ist da manchmal ganz irgendwie beieinander.
Yes, and of course it must be said that Ralph has also closely followed the story of Feldman Eco Park. As I mentioned, at the beginning of the war, when Russian forces advanced in February 2022, the park was under constant shelling. Many, many animals died. Helpers also lost their lives while trying to evacuate the animals. And Ralph witnessed this himself. He was there on site as well.
Wir waren in Kharkov und dann kriegte ich durch den Sascha mit, aber auch durch die Polizei von dort, von Kharkov, dass im Ecopark noch viele Tiere sind. Ich kannte den Park gar nicht und dann wurde mir gesagt, das ist fast unmöglich, dahin zu kommen, weil der Okkupant auch noch Teile vom Park kontrolliert. Das ist also, ich wusste gar nicht, was das ist. Also das ist so ein Freizeitpark gewesen mit vielen Tieren da drin, also ein ganz.
Yes, as you just said, Echo Park. I remember when we were in Kharkiv, and then I heard through Sasha, but also from the local police in Kharkiv, that there were still many animals in the eco park. I didn't even know the park at the time, and then I was told it is almost impossible to get there because the occupiers were still controlling parts of the area. I didn't really know what it was. It was basically a leisure park with many animals inside. A very nice place, but located far outside Kharkiv. So we drove there, and there were still countless checkpoints, and they almost didn't let us through. Of course, with Sasha, it worked. And then we arrived and saw a huge bison still tied up. I believe there were also a few lions and bears there. On the way, a whole group of pigs that had escaped came running toward us. And then the Ukrainian military was already there. They were in trenches, hiding. And they told us, hurry, hurry, get out of here, because shelling keeps coming in. So we left again, but we also met staff members from the park. I think a day or two later, I learned that people had been killed there as well in those attacks. And many animals had died. Nazar and Arrest, for example, were there with us. They also rescued a goat, which I believe is still alive today in Lviv, at Domivka. It was a pretty wild situation, and I still remember the way there very clearly. Huge impact craters everywhere, right next to the roads, constant shelling. I am actually grateful that there is now peace again in that area. But we must never forget that so many animals that were trapped and had no way out died in terrible conditions, either from starvation or were torn apart by shells and rockets, and that many people also lost their lives there.
In dem Gebiet wieder Ruhe eingekehrt ist. Ich war, wo wir letztens nach Wotschansk gefahren sind, auch noch da vorbeigekommen, habe wieder gesehen, dass dort gearbeitet wird. Also das freut mich, aber man darf nie vergessen, dass dort so viele Tiere, die auch eingesperrt waren, die dann nicht wegkamen, die hatten keine Option gehabt, ganz, ganz schlimm verhungert sind oder zerfetzt wurden von Granaten, Raketen und dass natürlich da auch viele Menschen ihr Leben gelassen haben.
Standing in Feldman Eco Park, facing that black leopard, Amira, the dog beside you, and hearing the distant sounds of war in the background, not extremely close but still clearly audible, along with repeated air raid alerts, everything feels surreal and strange. But in moments like this, it is no longer about the war as a whole. It is no longer about front lines on a map. It is about very concrete lives, a goat like Snowy, the children who come to stroke her, lemurs that need warmth to survive. Olena has shown what war does to a place that once was a public park. Months of shelling in 2022, destroyed enclosures, dead animals, dead colleagues. And yet they rebuilt it. For me, this also became a symbol of Ukrainian resilience, something we have often talked about in this podcast. This determination not to give up, to say, we continue, because we see meaning in this place. In this case, it is a place people need, where they can find calm, where they can recover from the horrors they have experienced at the front, whether they are soldiers, journalists, or rescue workers, and where children from occupied territories can also come. And sometimes, everything overlaps. In this park today, they also take in animals rescued from frontline areas. Among them are birds that get caught in nets now stretched over roads in combat zones to protect people from shelling and drone attacks. These net tunnels, stretching for kilometers, are meant to save human lives, but for animals, they become a threat. Birds get trapped in them, and they too find their way to Feldman Eco Park, where people try to save them. Ralf Sieger tells a similar story from a different angle, from vans full of dogs and cats, from destroyed villages, from operations alongside special units, where drones can become lethal at any moment. He travels from the Lower Rhine to the front lines because it is not reasonable, but because he believes it is right, to bring back animals and humans who otherwise would have almost no chance. Neither Olena nor Ralf can stop this war, and neither can we. But they can make sure it does not strip away everything human, including the way we look at animals. And that is where we come in, whether we choose to look, to donate, to tell these stories, or to look away, because we no longer want to see the war, that too is a decision, and it has consequences for humans and animals alike. This was Krisen Modus. The podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister, a journalist working at a radio station within the Funke Media Group. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us and leave a rating. It really helps make our work more visible. And feel free to send me suggestions for future episodes at krisenmodus@funkemedien.de. Take care. See you next time. All the best. Bye.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Ein Podcast von Funke.